It says, what is death? Death is the central dream from which all illusions stem. Is it not madness to think of life as being born, aging, losing vitality, and dying in the end? We've asked this question before, but now we need to consider this question more carefully. It's the one fixed, unchangeable belief of the world that all things in it are born only to die. Dying is regarded as the way of nature, not to be raised to question, but to be accepted as the natural law of life. The cyclical, the changing and unsure, the undependable and the unsteady, waxing and waning in a certain way upon a certain path, all this is taken as the will of God. And no one asks if a benign creator could will death. In this perception of the universe as God created it, it would be impossible to think of God as loving. For who has decreed that all things pass away, ending in dust and disappointment and despair, can but be feared? Page 66 in the teacher's manual. God holds your little life in his hand, but by a thread, ready to break it off without regret or care, perhaps today. Or if God waits, yet is the ending certain. Who loves such a God does not know of love, because he has denied that life is real. Death has become life's symbol. His world is now a battleground where contradiction reigns and opposites make endless war. Where there is death, is peace impossible. Death is the symbol of the fear of God. God's love is blotted out in the idea which holds God's love from awareness like a shield held up to obscure the sun. The grimness of the symbol is enough to show it cannot coexist with God. The idea of death holds an image of the Son of God in which he is laid to rest in devastation's arms, where worms wait to greet him and to last a little while by his destruction. Yet the worms as well are doomed to be destroyed as certainly, and so do all things live because of death. Devouring is nature's law of life. God is insane and fear alone is real. The curious belief that there is a part of dying things that may go on apart from what will die does not proclaim a loving God, nor reestablish any grounds for trust. If death is real for anything, there is no life. Death denies life. But if there is reality in life, death is denied. No compromise is possible in this. There is either a God of fear or a God of love. The world attempts 1,000 compromises and will attempt 1,000 more. Not one can be acceptable to God's teachers, because not one compromise could be acceptable to God. God does not make death, because God did not make fear. Fear and death both are equally meaningless to God. The reality, the so-called reality of death, is firmly rooted in the belief that God's child is a body. And if God created bodies, death would indeed be real. But God would not be loving. There is no point at which the contrast between the perception of the real world and that of the world of illusions becomes more sharply evident. Death is indeed the death of God if God is love. And now God's own creation must stand in fear of God. God is not father but destroyer. God is not creator but avenger. Terrible God's thoughts and fearful God's image. To look on God's creations is to die. And the last to be overcome will be death. Of course, without the idea of death, there is no world. All dreams will end with this one. This is salvation's or the course's final goal, the end of all illusions, and in death are all illusions born. What can be born of death and still have life? But what is born of God and still can die? The inconsistencies, the compromises, and the rituals the world fosters in its vain attempts to cling to death and yet to think love real are mindless magic, ineffectual, and meaningless. God is, and in God all created things must be eternal. Do you not see that otherwise God has an opposite and fear would be as real as love? Teacher of God, your one assignment can be stated thus. Accept no compromise in which death plays a part. Do not believe in cruelty, nor let attack conceal the truth from you. What seems to die has but been misperceived and carried to illusion. Now it becomes your task to let the illusion be carried to the truth. Be steadfast, but in this, be not deceived by the so-called reality of any changing form. Truth neither moves nor wavers nor sinks down to death and dissolution. And what is the end of death? Nothing but this, the realization that the Son of God is guiltless now and forever. Nothing but this. But do not let yourself forget it is not less than this. Okay, so this is the part of the course that deals with the whole idea of death, the whole idea of death and dying. And as usual with the Course in Miracles, the best way to hear it is for us to remember that we don't have to believe it, we don't have to accept it, we don't have to welcome it. Some of it's going to be hard to believe, some of it might be startling. But if you use it, you'll find out that it's true. So each section has, it's on page 66.
Yeah, I was looking for it, but I think it was in the student.
It's in the teacher's manual. That's the last book. It's the last part of the book. Mm-hmm. You got it?
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm. First of all, let me just throw a question out to the group before I go into the whole death thing. How many of you believe that you die and that's it? Your body dies, you're gone. You don't exist no more. You're done. Anybody?
No.
Okay. What do you believe happens after death? Wednesday's a discussion more. So just to kind of get y'all. Right. Okay, Wednesday's not just me lecturing. It's us talking. Okay. And there are no wrong answers. I'm just asking what you think. Yeah.
I think there's still consciousness.
Mm-hmm.
You're in a body, you're outside of a body. I don't really know what happens or where you go, but
uh-huh.
There's consciousness.
Cool.
There's awareness.
Cool. Cool. There are no wrong answers. Okay, there are no wrong answers.
Like maybe instead of you being thinking that you are your body, well, the body is no more, but you are still there because it's thought of more of the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
And it's imagined or said that, you know, the spirit just leaves and maybe go into another body, you know,
okay.
Go into, you know, becomes and I guess this is what brings in the thought of reincarnating into something else. Some
mm-hmm.
people say, well, go into a cow, go into a horse,
mm-hmm.
go into a little newborn baby.
Mm-hmm.
And we see evidence of something like that when we say, some people, are you sure? Act just like your uncle. You sure look like somebody I used to know, you know? And this goes on and on. It's just like a repetition over and over. And then And if you check yourself, you say, well, you know, I think I got some behaviors like somebody I used to know. You know?
Okay.
So the spirit, I think, stays around.
Okay.
Indefinitely.
Okay.
Until it's tired of this kind of stuff and then goes to another place, maybe.
Yeah, I hear you. Anybody else got any thoughts about death, what happens after death?
I think we're probably more aware of our godliness or our connection with God.
Mm-hmm.
Those, you know, all this stuff's gone.
Mm-hmm.
All this interference.
Yeah.
So that we can experience more of the bliss of who we really are.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else? Any thoughts about it? Okay. Alright. Okay, let's see what the Course says about that. The first paragraph is really interesting. The basic premise of the Course is that God is love and not fear. And that God is eternal and everything that God creates is eternal. And that everything that God or love creates is an extension of God or love. And the body is a vehicle or a means for communication. So the body is just the way that we communicate and express ourselves in this world, but the body isn't what we are. And that there are basically two kinds of experiences that people have in the body. They either have an experience in the body of feeling separate and therefore feeling fear or feeling afraid, which is divided up into a lot of different feelings like anxiety, anger, weary, lack, sickness, attack. Or people are perceiving themselves in the body and they're experiencing peace or love, which is peace or freedom or joy or relationship or oneness or abundance. So everybody in the world is either having one or two experiences at any given moment. They're either having some experience that's some form of peace, or they're having some experience that's some form that's not peace. The Course is much more relevant to the content, what's going on within us, than what's going on without, because it sees the whole world as being neutral. It's neither good nor bad. It's what you want to use it for. So the body, if that's not what we are, then he's saying right here that, I love this first sentence, he said, isn't it madness to think of life as being born, aging, losing vitality, and dying in the end? And so it's like, what kind of a loving creator would create us just to be born, grow old, and die? And then in the meantime, we're trying to hope we can pay our credit card bill. I mean, that sounds insane. You know what I'm saying? It's like, just think about it. You know, we were created. I don't know about you, but I remember when I was a kid, and I didn't think anything was more unfair than the idea of death. I can be in real little saying, you know, well, you mean my mother's going to die, my father's going to die, my sisters and brothers are going to die, everybody that I love is going to die? And they say, yeah, you know. So to me, immediately, that didn't sound fair. That sounded insane. It's funny how when you're a child, if you go back, you had a lot of natural wisdom as a child that was educated right out of you. You know what I'm saying? It's like you come here and you have a pretty open mind and you got a pretty good sanity. But then after everybody get through with you, you crazy as a Betsy bug, as you say. You know what I'm saying? You hating each other. You mad. You're in competition. So the course. What I like about the course is just ask questions like that. It says. Then it goes on to say, well, it's the one fixed, unchangeable belief of the world is that all things in it are born only to die. So it's not many things that people agree on in the world, but the one thing that most people agree on is death and taxes, right? They'll always say, well, you're going to die. You can pretty much get everybody to go, you're going to die. And that's what it just said. That's the one fixed, unchangeable belief of the world. He says this is regarded as the way of nature and that we should accept it as just a natural law of life. And he says that everything changing, everything being unsure, having nothing we can really depend on, he says that this is taken as God's will. And then he says, nobody asks if a benign creator would do this. And so that's what I like to do with the course is as I go through the course, I always like to do it as I go through it. I don't like to use the course as something to analyze. So the question is, do you think a benign creator would create it where you were just born just to die and in a world where there's nothing you can be sure of and you just hope you can make it? He says that's the question. And I personally don't think so. I don't think a benign creator would set it up where I'm born, I age, I lose vitality, and die. Somehow or another, that doesn't sound like, if I was a creator, I certainly wouldn't create something that I love to die. And I know my capacity to love is not anywhere near what God's capacity to love is supposed to be. And even at our level of consciousness, it's not apparent in here if you're a parent or with anybody you love that you want them to die. So the Course is saying, why do you think your creator would create you to die? You wouldn't create the things you love to die. That's what I like about it. It's like it asks questions at people. He says, but we just accept it. We just accept it, so we don't question it. Then he says, well, if that's the way you look at it, he says, well, then it's impossible to think of God as being loving, because if what created you can take your life away at any moment, then he says, well, that creator should just be feared. I'm just wondering when the last day is going to be my day. He says it right here. God holds your life in his hand, but by a thread, ready to break it off, right? Without regret or care. Perhaps today. For all we know, this could be my last day on earth. That's what he's saying. He says, if he doesn't take it today, he says, well, he's going to take it one day. And so the Course says, whoever loves a God like that, the Course says, they don't know what love is. And he says, now death has become the symbol of life, and now we are living on this battleground, as the Course calls it. He says, where contradiction rules and opposites make endless war. I love the way this book is so powerful to me, because it can say more in one paragraph than most books say in a chapter. I mean, that one paragraph was loaded. First of all, it's telling me that if I believe that I was created by something that wants to kill me, perhaps today, he says, then what I was created by certainly isn't loving. And whatever created me might take my life or the life of a loved one in a day. He says, that certainly isn't loving. And then he says, we're on a battleground where it says, contradiction seems to rule and opposites make endless war. I got my belief, you got your belief, that's battle. I believe this, you believe that, let's battle. You know, so most of the time, it's everybody trying to defend their position, and those positions are opposite. But when I sit in a room, I see each one of you as being divine beings, all having equal access to that unlimited power that created us, and each one of you on your own spiritual path, with your own individual curriculum, with your own individual guidance. What that does for me is that frees you to be you. That frees you to be you. I'm not trying to make everybody in the room believe what I believe, do what I do, and do it my way. The ones that I accept that we're the same, but we got our own individual way of going to that same place, which is love, then it becomes, I'm curious about what your process is. I'm curious about what your process is. I'm curious about what your process is. And if there's something I can benefit from your process, then I'm open to hearing what your process is. Then I'll accept from your process what feels right in my soul. And what doesn't feel right for me, I don't condemn it in you. I just know that that's not something I'm ready to use within myself. Could you imagine how well a group of people would get along if everybody had that attitude? Not only that, how much they benefit from each other's experiences. Like a lot of times when I'm around beings in white bodies, they'll say, well, I never noticed you was in a black body. And that's why I ask them, well, are you blind? Because of course I'm in a black body. Of course I'm in. That's not something I have to run away from. That's not something I'm ashamed of. You don't have to pretend that I'm not black. There's something that's coming through the black experience of who I am that I could share with you that might be helpful, just like you could tell me some things about coming through the white female experience that might be helpful to me. But who we really are is independent of either one of those. As spiritual beings, we're beyond our sex, we're beyond our race, and all of that stuff. So at a higher level of consciousness, this is just the role that we're playing in this great cosmic drama that we're here to learn love. Because this is really Earth school. This is, I call it Earth school. This is just a place where souls come to learn lessons in love and how to love, you know. And it's and in our soul, we all know that this isn't our home. We can try to pretend like we think it's our home, but all of us know in our guts that this is not where we came from. This is where we're learning at, you know. And some of us come into the world with that awareness that it just don't seem like, it seems like it's more to this than what it looks like. And some people are totally asleep and they don't question it at all. And we all know people like that. They just accept whatever it is, the script that's been laid down. They don't deviate from it whatsoever. And they're innocent too. And they'll have their point in their spiritual development where they begin to wake up to their spiritual identity and realize that they're more than what they've been taught. So the Course says that what we want to do then is we want to make a hardcore decision right now that we want to go for what's true. And so it says in the next paragraph, and I'm going to throw it open again. I love this next paragraph. It says, death is the symbol of the fear of God. That death is the symbol of the fear of God. And the Course defines God as love, and the Course defines God as life. Okay, so that's another way of saying death is the symbol of the fear of life. People who are afraid of life and afraid to express their life, so therefore they have a lot of drama and conflict in their life, they look forward to death. Mm-hmm. Miserable people always look forward to death. They think death is going to solve every problem. Well, when all else fails, I'm going to die. But really, the Course says death is nothing but the refusal to make a decision. Just saying that somehow or another it's going to be all right after I die, so therefore I don't have to live right now, is a reflection of the fear of life.
And I went, wow, that's deep. So he says that the idea of a loving God is blotted out in the idea of death. My Creator couldn't possibly love me and kill me. So the Course says, so when you believe in death, he says, then it makes you unaware of the eternal love of God, and that the idea of death is just like a shield that you're holding up before the sun. In other words, the sunlight might be wanting to get to you to warm your face, but if you got a shield up there, you can't even feel the warmth of the sun. Well, imagine God and love as being the sun, and the idea that you die as being the shield that blocks that love and that life. So he says, so that whole idea of death hides the glory of life. Suppose you were told today that they just invented a pill, and if you take this pill, you can't die and nothing can hurt you. Do you think your whole attitude about what you would do today would change? If you were told you couldn't die, you couldn't be hurt, and you didn't have to eat to live, you didn't need no food to live. So in essence, what would you do today if you had no needs and all your needs were taken care of and you couldn't be hurt? Would you really be doing what you're doing right now?
No.
Thank you. It shouldn't be a hard question. Of course we wouldn't be doing what, because the Course says 90% of what we do is all about providing for the body. Everything that we do is about taking care of the body, defending the body, and feeding the body, or trying to get companionship for the body. So you got bodies hunting for other bodies for relationships, and you got bodies getting up, going to work every day, a lot of them doing stuff they don't want to do so that they can feed and house what? Their body. What are we trying to make sure doesn't get sick? The body. What are we trying to make sure doesn't get attacked? The body. Everything, of course, says everything that we do is for the body. And if your body was not your primary focus, what would you be doing today?
And that's such a great question, because my ego went
Why do you think it went zzz?
Well, you asked the question, and kind of that in that split second, a part of me got all right.
Mm-hmm.
And then immediately the ego was like, well, wait a minute. Well, wait, I don't need that much time, or I won't have anything to do, or I don't know how to do that, because I have to feed the body, and I have to go to work.
Uh-huh.
So it kind of just, yeah, it kind of zitted on, I couldn't really get answers.
Yeah, and the ego, for those of you not familiar, the ego is, the Course basically says, the ego is just our sense of being separate. It's our past learning. It's the identity that we think we are based on what we've been taught. And that when most people tell you who they are, they're just telling you the accumulated experiences of all their past learning. They're not really telling you who they are. They're just telling you who they think they are based on what they've been told and what they go through. There's a lesson in the workbook that I love, lesson 7, that goes, I see only the past. And in that workbook lesson, he tells you he said, you know, pick up a cup and look at it and put it up to your lips. He said, what would you know about this cup other than what you've been taught about this cup? So, indeed, do you really know what you're holding? Or do you basically just know what you've been taught that you're holding? If we had to learn to call this a car, I would say, pass me a car so I can drink some water. And all of us would agree. We see that with language. That's all language is. It's just Spanish got another term for this. So it's us making up labels for things. And so the Course is saying, okay, then all you really know are the labels you've learned. But what if it's not the label? What if you're not what you've been taught you are? You know? And so when the Course says stuff like you're not your body, it does kind of make people get uncomfortable, because their whole world depends on them being a body. The whole world depends on that perception of themselves, you know. Especially, I think about in relationships between men and women. You know, that men are from Mars, women are from Venus, you know. Men and women can never understand each other. Why? Because we've learned to think women are one way, and we've learned to think men are another way, and then all these labels interact with each other. I know women who think so differently from what the average woman thinks like, that they would think that these women were aliens. I know men who think more so different from the way traditionally men think, like the people would think these men were alien. Because when you're around people who realize they determine what they believe and how they see things and how they express themselves and what their values are and what their beliefs are, these people live a level of freedom and peace that's far beyond anything that the program populace knows anything about. Because they know that they can decide for themselves what their value system is going to be. They can decide for themselves what their relationships are going to be like. They don't have to do it the way that society says they have to do it. They just learn how society does it, do enough of what society says you must do, and then do their own thing. Mm. And those are the people who are truly created, not the ones who are the sheep. I call them sheeple instead of people. Yeah, most people are sheeples. You know, you just tell them what to do. They want to be told what to do. And if you tell them what to do, then they feel good. And they're satisfied. You know, they just want you to tell them. You know, they don't want to think. They just want their toys. You know, that's why their gas had to go down for a while, because people were beginning to get really, 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 really upset, because people tend not to care about what's going on in the world unless it affects them personally. If it doesn't affect them personally, that's especially true of Americans, unless it affects us personally, we don't really care about what's going on. But gas was starting to affect people personally. That $3 a gallon, which is what it's back to now practically, it was beginning to affect people personally. And so they were getting upset about it, you know. So the thing that I'm saying that for is that a conscious being is a being who realizes they have the power of decision, that they can choose what their values are. They can choose what their beliefs are. So the Course is saying, let's take it to another level then. He says the fact that the whole idea of something that you love dying, it's like when my sister's son was murdered 20 years ago. And it was one of those things where he left out of the door in the morning. See you later, Mama. That's the last time she ever saw him. You know, because we just assume when somebody says see you later, we're going to see him later. And she didn't see him later. And, of course, that was devastating to her. And when I talked to her, I was the only one that was really emphasizing to her that what her son was not his body. Everybody else was helping in the way they knew best to help. But sometimes that's not as helpful as people think. They were just really reinforcing that she had lost him forever. And later on, after the situation was over, she had some time to do some healing. And she told me, she said, you know, the stuff that you were telling me from the Course was the most helpful stuff that I heard, because the idea that he wasn't his body and that his spirit and who he really was lived on, even though it wouldn't take the place of him being here, there was more comfort in that idea than any other idea that anybody could give me, was that what my son was not that body that was in that casket. And that's what the Course is saying here. The grimness of the symbol of death should be enough to show that it can't coexist with God. It's such a grim idea. He says that we ought to get that nothing that loves us would even come up with the idea that you die, or that what you really love die. Now, there are lots of explanations for tragic situations that New Thought teachings give that sound much more helpful, I would say, than what the world teaches. I can't prove it to you, but I know if I had a choice between what I've learned through New Thought and what I've learned through Old Thought, I'd go with New Thought every time. You know what I'm saying? It's much easier for me to relate to an eternal soul having a physical experience and then learning some lesson, or learning the lesson that they've learned and appear to move on. You know, whether it seems like somebody died in an accident, for all we know, that was the extent of what that soul needed to learn in this particular plane, and then that soul moved on to another plane, and they did it in such a way that they learned the lesson, and also the people left behind also learning a spiritual lesson from that. So my point is, there are other ways to look at every single thing we go through that could make us feel more peace about it, if we wanted to. The problem is that most people, the Course says, love conflict and they love fear, and we've been programmed to be in conflict and fear, so the average person is much more likely to want to buy into the fear idea than the love idea.
Mm-hmm. Is that the answer that the Course in Miracles gives them when somebody dies or something happens and the why comes up? You are not your body. There's a lesson to be learned.
Well, that's the answer. That's what this section is covering. Okay. Is that the idea that the Course is trying to get across more than anything is that we don't die, and what we are is eternal, and that's it.
That's the answer.
The answer is what we are is eternal and does not die. But the body is the means of communication in this plane, which means that without a body, there's no communication with those who have passed on, because we believe we can only communicate with people that are in bodies. So the person that continues to be in communication with people who appears to have died are beings who believe that the body is not what the person is, and they believe that the person still exists, or the being still exists apart from death, because it's all one anyway. So, for instance, my brother and my mother have made their transition, but since I don't believe my mother or my brother are dead, then I still have communication with my mother and with my brother. But you say that to the average person, and they think you're insane, because they believe in death. They believe that the end of the body is the end of the person. So since they believe that, and this is very important, what you believe is always what you're going to perceive. So if you don't believe that it's possible to communicate beyond the body, if you don't believe that it's possible to live on beyond death, there will be no evidence in your physical reality that occurs. And so you would not be able to communicate. And since most people just believe in what they see, or what they physically experience, then they just think it's crazy, because we tend to believe only what we believe, and what other people believe, we don't believe, right? So therefore, I don't see it because I don't believe it. I don't see it because I don't believe it. But if you believe it, you will see it. If you accept that truth will be proven to you. But it can't be proven to you until you accept that it's true. But most people go, you show me, then I'll believe it. The truth doesn't work that way, though. The truth works just the opposite. You accept something as true, then you see it. And see, the average person is always, show me first. Well, no, I can't show you, because if you don't accept that it's true, you're not going to see it anyway. So you have to first, we were talking about this Sunday, how you have to see it in yourself first, and then you see it outside yourself, because the physical reality is just a reflection of your own deepest thoughts, feelings, emotions, and beliefs. You see what I'm saying?
Well, I don't know. I think that answers the question. If the question was, when somebody dies and you say, why, it sounds like you're saying, why ask why? There's no why, because...
Well, you can ask why, but no one can answer that question externally. You know what I'm saying? There's nothing I can tell you that I can prove to you about what happens after death. I can share with you what the Course says, but it's through your own spiritual work that you come to that Course says, I can give you the experience. I can remove the blocks to you having the experience that would show you that what I'm saying is true. That's why I said that about using ideas, and they'll show you that the ideas are true. Because what this is going to be my 26th year of teaching the Course, and what I've noticed in 26 years is that particular point is that most people analyze the truth, but they don't use it. They'll sit back and they'll all debate about it, but they won't use it. Like, for instance, if I'm feeling upset about something, the average person doesn't go, I'm giving my feelings about what my mother did to me last night all the meaning that it has for me. I'm giving what my kid is doing right now all the meaning that it has for me. See, that's using the truth. Using the truth is applying it to the situation. Therefore, it's not my child that's upset me. It's me upset me. It's the meaning that I'm giving to what my child is doing that's upset me. It's the meaning that I'm giving to what my boss said to me that's upset me. It's the meaning that I give to President Bush that's upsetting me. President Bush is not upsetting me. President Bush don't even know I exist. It's I'm making myself mad about the war, or I'm making myself upset about my financial situation. See, that's the truth. You know, and so if you went through your day and you realized that you were the one that were making yourself upset, well, then the next thing you would do, if you got common sense, is you would go, what are the new interpretations I can use in my life that would keep me from making myself upset all the time? See, all of a sudden you go, oh, if I'm making myself upset, then I need some new perception so I can stop making myself upset. Okay, that's using the idea. Not using the idea would be reading that I give everything I see all the meaning that it has for me, walk out of the door, somebody does something, and you say, that person upset me. See, that's not using the idea. So if I project on you that you're making me mad, then I'm really reinforcing the old thought system. I'm not using the new thought system. So then I wonder why the new thought system isn't working. Well, the truth is, you read it, you talked about it, but you didn't use it. So without using it, you don't get the result. Like, I had to use the idea that I'm not a body. Like, one of the course lessons is, I'm not a body, I'm free. I'm still as God created me. Okay, well, if I continue believing I'm not a body, I'm free, 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 free. Well, the idea of freedom would start to do what? Create freedom. I start perceiving myself as free. I would start to get results from that idea because I'm using the idea. So to think about the idea is not the same as using the idea.
And your sister used the idea.
And then she felt
better.
She used it. Certainly didn't take away the pain of losing her son, but it was less pain than she would have had if she had not heard that idea, because it's all relative.
But then, according to the course, when you're having whatever you're feeling, feel the feelings, and is it that self inquiry? What am I feeling? And why am I feeling this? Do you do that? Or do you intellectualize in that way? Or do you just feel it? Feel the feeling. I'm upset. Or do you kind of...
You know that feel the feeling is not an idea that... Think about it. You know that feel your feelings is not really an idea that needs to be analyzed. It really would be feel your feelings.
Right.
Whatever that is.
Right.
Just let yourself feel the feeling. You know, that's how the ego gets us. It'll do stuff like that and say, you say feel the feeling, but what does that mean? But you know, yeah, why, and how. But I'm angry. I'm feeling my anger. It doesn't mean I'm bad. It's just what I feel. And then the Course says, now, to use the idea would be, I feel my anger. My anger is a call for love. That's using the idea. So you would go, what I'm feeling when I'm angry is my call for love, my call for help. Since the mind loves to label, and the ego loves to label, it loves to interpret, right? It loves to judge. It loves to analyze, right? So the Course says, all right, don't fight your desire to analyze. Don't fight your desire to judge. Just use the Holy Spirit's judgment. I'm going to give you a judgment. So you just got to judge, Earl. I'm going to give you a judgment to use that will take you beyond judgment and then end that whole process. What is that? Well, I'm mad. That's my call for love. I'm upset. That's my call for love. I'm feeling sick. That's my call for love. I feel depressed. That's my call for love. So just like I'm calling it depression, I could just as easily call it a call for love. Because depression is a word. A call for love is a word, but the difference is, when I say it's a call for love, then I'm increasing the focus on love, and I'm increasing the idea of love. And since everything comes from an idea, since it's ideas that produce everything, by me focusing on the idea of love, I draw more love to me. I draw more peace to me. But if I just go, I'm just depressed, I'm just angry, that just creates more depression and more anger. Because that's not seeing it as what it really is. I really want love. That's all I want. That's why I'm mad. That's why I'm upset. That's why I'm sick, is because I'm feeling a lack of love. I'm feeling a lack of peace. That's what it's really about. And that's what you do. That way you don't have to fight your feelings. I don't go through the day trying not to get mad. Like a lot of people think, if they're studying the course, then it means you're supposed to go through the whole day, and if you ever feel upset about anything, somehow or another you failed. And that's not what it's saying at all. It's just saying reinterpret everything that you're experiencing so that it will give you more peace. Yeah, I feel a little depressed today. Today I'm feeling a little bit more of a call for love today than I did yesterday. Today I'm feeling a little bit more call for God than I did yesterday. See the difference? I was mad all day. Today I feel a call for love. Now, these kind of statements are so powerful that, you know, the ego always tries to make people go unconscious on simple truths. Because you can do a simple truth. Complex truths, the ego mind loves it. Because you can chew on them all day long and think you're doing great things, and you're not really doing nothing. You're just distracting yourself. We can make it all complex. What about my boss? And he did it, but you know, I did do real good on that project. And he just wants to promote his brother, so he made it look like I didn't do it. And you know, it's like you can take it into that realm, but you're not doing anything but reinforcing the very thing that you want to let go of. And so again, I don't want to get too far off the subject today, because this idea that he's saying today, the first two paragraphs. It's very much trying to get us to the point that we realize that the idea of death is such a grim image that we need to make the decision that the idea of death, as we learned it, is not an idea that comes from God. Is there anybody else that want to share anything? Or ask a question about anything?
When I was young, I think around 18, and then he passed away.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but fortunately, I'm here. But one of the things that I got from my grandmother and mother, because just around the same time, too, one of my cousins passed away.
Mm-hmm.
Like you said, you had a feeling of, you know, sadness and things like that. But I remember my mother and grandmother telling me that, well, you know, they just crossed the river to the ancestral village. So it gave me another sort of feeling. So once she passed away, like, same feeling. Initially, I was really mad, you know. But going through her letters, I remember, yeah, Ma said this to me, so she's somewhere else, you know. So I do believe that, I think to me, my own average mind, I think it's just a continuation of experiencing something that, because maybe we are in this world just to take care of the body and right.
You know, it's like I feel like there's one part of us that's programmed by the world that we're here to take care of the body. But I believe there's another part, that part that you talked about that was open to the idea that he was across the river, which meant that life still continued. See, that's our real self. It's like the Course continually tries to get us to understand that our personality self, that self that we think we are, that we learn from the world, one of the points that it makes over and over and over again, the Course calls it the ego, is that that personality self is not who we are. And it's so hard for people to get that because they identify with it so closely. But the real self is that part of you that senses that we're more than what that is. The Course says your Christ self, as it would call it, is the self that brought you here today. It's not the part of us that believes in what the world teaches that even brought us here today. It wouldn't even brought us in the door. The part that brought us in the door was the part that wanted to hear something different from what the world teaches. And so he's saying here, he says that you've got to stop, like in paragraph 4, he talks about how we've got to stop compromising about the issue of life and death. That we need to make a decision. The decision is, I know it looked like things die. I'm not denying that it looks, and the Course says that, I'm not denying that it looks like things die. But on the inside, we have to make a decision that life is eternal. and that death is not the end. That's the core idea that it's trying to get across to us today. And then in paragraph 5, it says that as long as we look at death as real, then we'll have fear. The fear of death, which he says is the same thing as the fear of God. That's why I posed that question. If you knew you couldn't die, and you knew you couldn't be hurt, and notice that it wasn't a lot that people had to say behind that idea. If I knew I couldn't die, if I knew I couldn't be hurt, and if I knew I didn't have to work for a living because I don't need to eat, and I'll throw that back out to the group again, what would you do? What would you be doing with your time? How would you live today if that issue was not an issue? What would you be doing?
I have no clue what I would be doing.
Partying, flying
kites. I was about to say that. Partying.
Going to the beach.
Okay. So right. So what you're saying is you'd be doing some the things you would love to do, as opposed to just doing things that you feel like you have to do.
Exactly.
Yeah. Right. Exactly. And the course is saying that's what life is about. That's exactly what life is about. Life is about the expression of creativity, the expression of love, the expression of freedom, the expression of joy. When you lose sight of your true identity, then it's all about survival. And most people don't realize it, but the survival level is the lowest level of consciousness to live on. The lowest level is what they call a security level. If you're coming from a survival level, That's the most fearful level that most people live on. So they're not living. You're not living until you're acting without fear. When you're coming from a place that's not full of fear. And since it's so normal for us to be there, most people have forgotten what it feels like. Sometimes they say about me as a little child, because sometimes I have to try to go back to that point when I was a child where I wasn't worried about survival. So each day was about what could I do that day? What could I discover? What could I create? What could I play with? You see what I'm saying? It was like it was a totally different level of expression than what most adults live by. And the Course says that's why we age. That's why we age. Because of fear. Because we've lost sight of our true selves.
And it's almost like it starts when we have to... They make us go to school.
Yeah.
Because we're in that joy of childhood before then, and then, oh no, you've got to get up and go to school, you've got to do your homework. And that's when the brainwashing really, really.
And the scary part, though, for me, is that when we are teenagers and when we're young, we usually can't wait till we can be an adult. So that we can so-called have this freedom and independence, right? And then we create our parents or the authority figures in our own minds. It's like the parents are gone, but we still live exactly like we were, as if we still were in somebody's house. We still acting according to other people's beliefs about what we should be doing. You know, the average adult is not taking advantage of the fact that they're totally independent and free and they can create their own reality. And that's what everybody want to be grown for. And then something like the Course says, yeah, that's exactly what I want you to do. I want you to start thinking for yourself. So in that last paragraph, he says, your one assignment could thus be stated, don't accept any compromise in which death plays a part. In other words, don't believe in cruelty. Don't let attack hide the truth from you. Yeah, I know it looked like so-and-so was attacked and then they were killed. It looked like the people in Iraq was killed. It looked like an attack on that convoy killed those U.S. soldiers. He says, don't let attack, either in your own mind or in your physical reality, hide the truth from you. Because the truth is that soldier was not that body that got blown up in that tank. The truth is that person that appeared to get murdered last night was not that body that appeared to be murdered. Don't let the physical perception of death make you think that there is no life after death. So this whole class today was about how do we get to the end of death. Like the last sentence says, well, how do you get to the end of death? Which I think is a great question. But the answer that the Course gives is so opposite to what the mind would think of. That's what I love about it. That's why I think it works, because it's not what I would think of. Do you know what it says the end of death is? What does it say, that last sentence?
Well,
next to the last sentence. The realization. The realization that the Son of God is guiltless now and forever. So a lot of people go, well, how do you get rid of the, how do you get rid of fear of death? How do you get rid of the idea of death? How do you know your eternal life? How do you get what you're talking about, Earl? And the Course says, the more you work on the idea that you're guiltless and that you're innocent, which is absolutely the exact opposite of what we were taught in most traditional religions. When most people are born and in any kind of traditional religion, there are two thoughts that are infused in your brain as early as they can.
You're a sinner.
You're either a sinner, and for those who didn't grow up with the Bible, like I have many Jewish friends, you're guilty. So even if a person not from a religious background, they still probably have strong beliefs in guilt. You know what I'm saying?
I have a question, though. I'm kind of listening to you. Sometimes, you know, I would go to a feeling that, wow, maybe I want to become the president of the United States. Or become like a Bill Gates. And so suddenly you pass away and you didn't really achieve that. Or you want to, there's a feeling, I don't know what is the ego, but
yeah.
You get mad. And like, why did that happen? I don't know if that's... Is that ego or...
Yeah. Well, of course we call it ego simply because, you know, your true fulfillment doesn't really come from anything outside of yourself. So the idea that being the president would be something that would make me happy is where the deception started. See, the deception started with my idea that I had to change something about myself or something outside of myself for me to be happy. And that's why most people are unhappy. They're unhappy not because they couldn't be happy today by having gratitude for the blessings that they have in their life right now. Most people are unhappy because they wish they were in a situation different from the one that they're in. And that's what the Course says, that's what a need is. A need is nothing to believe that you would be better in some condition other than the one that you're in. So if you set it up where wherever I am isn't enough or wherever I am is not fulfilling, then you keep yourself perpetually unhappy all the time. So if I'm mad at myself because I'm not making the $200,000 a year that I told myself when I was 21 years old that I was going to be making if I'm this age, then I would be spending every day being mad because I don't have $200,000 coming in this year, and I'd miss the beautiful weather today, I'd miss the friends in my life, I'd miss all the beautiful things that's going on in my experience because I don't have $200,000. So what I'm doing is I'm constantly, the Course, it's sort of like, how does he put it? He said we make up fantasies and then we spend our lives pursuing false needs. He calls it false needs. He says we make up needs that we don't really have because, see, whether I'm a president or not doesn't have anything to do with my survival. Zilch. So it's really not a need that I have to have in order to survive even at a physical level. Most people are making themselves unhappy about needs that have nothing to do with their survival. I'm miserable because I don't have a new SUV. Well, there's nothing about that SUV that has anything to do with my survival. I'm not happy because I don't have the kind of clothes I think I like. There's nothing about having another kind of sweater that has anything to do with my survival. So the Course is trying to get us to see that all true happiness and true joy always comes from the now, and it always comes from whatever, from things that we can have in our present right now that's within us, but we are not taught that. We're taught that our happiness lies in everything but ourselves. In the roles that we fulfill, the getting another body to be my girlfriend, to have that job that I want, and the Course is saying, and that's what the Course calls illusions. Illusions are simply needs that we make up, he says, that we don't really need, that we believe that we do, so we do everything we can to make them real. And then he says, you can tell it's an illusion because when you get it, you're still not satisfied. He says that's how you can always tell an illusion. It's because even when you get it, you're still not satisfied. And so at first that confused me until I realized the reason why I wasn't satisfied was not necessarily because I had that thing and it wasn't satisfying me. I wasn't satisfied because I wasn't satisfied. I wasn't satisfied because I wasn't deciding to be grateful. I wasn't deciding to appreciate what I had. I was already on the hunt for the next thing. I didn't even have time enough to enjoy this new relationship that I just formed with you, because as soon as I got this relationship with you, then instead of appreciating you, I immediately wanted to change you and make just tweak you a little bit and make you a little bit more what I like, what I think I want you to be in order to make me happy. So I didn't accept you. I started to want to change you. And how many of you all have had relationships where the very thing that attracted the person to you was the first thing they wanted to change about you the once they got with you? Like if you were the kind of person they met you because you were the life of the party and you were meeting people and you had lots of friends and they get in a relationship with you, they don't want you to go to the friends. Yeah, they didn't want you to be quiet. They don't want you to extend. They don't want you to talk to anybody. And that's the way an illusion is. An illusion never appreciates what is. An illusion can never be in the now. An illusion isn't grateful. I'm finally really getting the power of gratitude, how gratitude mm-hmm. is really the most important quality to develop to change your consciousness. It's just purely being thankful that I am alive and for what is in my life. And then that in turn attracts more to be grateful for, and it just builds on itself. But the ego man is not like that. The ego man is, what's missing? Let me see if I can fulfill this lack that's missing. So it's always looking for what's missing. And so the Course is saying, the most important thing you can do to take yourself to that level where you get in touch with your eternal nature, the most important thing you can do is to reinforce the idea of your innocence, your sinlessness, and your guiltlessness. And that's what separates the Course from everything else. Mm-hmm. It's not based on the idea of guilt, mm-hmm. and it's not based on the idea of sin. And that's what makes people freak out about it. Because it's not saying we were born in sin, and it's not saying that there's something inherently wrong with us, or that there's something lacking in us. It's saying that we only deserve love.
And if you know you're innocent, and you are innocent, then you're not attacked.
And you're not going to attack.
Exactly.
You're not attacked, and you're not going to attack. It's only the guilty mind that attracts attack anyway. It's only the guilty mind. And so even a nice, like people say, well, why do nice people attract attack? Well, you talk to that little old lady that's really, really nice, and she is sweet, but she'll still tell you she believes in guilt and she believes in sin. And not only that, she'll say she believes she can be hurt. So still, there's a belief that I'm vulnerable. There's a belief that there's something about me that can be hurt. And that's where it comes from. And so the Course says, if you want to take the idea of death and begin to totally transform that idea so that it's no longer a limit, you don't have to debate what happens after death. What you want to do is continually increase your belief and acceptance in your innocence in this life. All right?
I'd like to share just something mm-hmm. briefly on my experience when my first husband made his transition.
Mm-hmm.
He was in a coma for 4 days. But he actually went, not in the body,
mm-hmm.
went to the two people and chose them to come and be with me when he made his transition.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And at the time of the transition, my friend Lori was on John's left side. Michael was at his right side, or at his feet. I was on his right side. And at one point, I was rubbing the area of his third eye,
mm-hmm.
and telling him that each of our children loved him. Scott loves you, Stephen loves you, Sherilyn loves you, and I love you. And I was suddenly aware that every time I was saying that, his energy was leaving, and then it would kind of come back in. And then there was a humorous joke that we had. The three of us had all celebrated together regarding John, and I don't need to go into that now. And out of my mouth came words related to this humorous incident. And so I just said, it's only Mike, Lori, and me here, John, so if you want to go out with your underpants on top of your head, you can. And of course, I didn't say that mind level. I mean, that just...
mm-hmm.
And he was gone. And when we walked out to the car then to go home, Mike and Lori had their two cars. I don't remember how it was. But we're walking out, and the car parked next to us
mm-hmm.
in Illinois, vanity plates are really common. The car to the right of the car we were getting into had on its license plates, ha, ha. There is no death.
Yeah.
There is no death.
Yeah.
And if you're open to communication,
there you go.
People who transcend their bodies are actually closer to you than they ever could have been in body.
Exactly. I could not agree more. My ego self is much more afraid of suffering than dying.
Right.
You know, when I think about the idea of leaving my body, is not as frightening to me as the idea of being in my body, debilitated in some way. Mm-hmm. And so that's what I'm working on, is how to change my perception of any kind of a bodily state that I could create for myself. It's not so much about, because out of the body there's no pain. But in the body is where pain and pleasure are located. So I want to create an innocent mind. Because, see, like you said, to get in touch with your innocence is the greatest protective fault you can ever give yourself. Because it's only anger, guilt, and grievances that attract attack. And so the Course is saying to us, okay, don't fight your anger all day. Don't repress your anger. Just reinterpret it. And that's easier to do than to try to spend all day not getting mad. It's to go, hey, I feel it. That's my call to remember my innocence. That's my call for love. That's the key thought. Sometimes I wish I could just emblaze that in myself and everybody that comes to my class, that there's nothing you can do better for yourself financially, emotionally, relationship, health, or anything than to increase your belief in your guiltlessness and your sinlessness and your innocence. And that's not what's emphasized in our society at all.
But sometimes the process is tough, so how do you quickly adjust to it? Sometimes, because sometimes you internalize an attack, you know, and you have this anger feeling, so what's the first process, or if there's a first process?
Well, that's what I'm saying. The process is when you do that, to interpret it as, that's my call for love, that's my call for help, and I'm going to resolve to, as much as I possibly can, not attack. Because readiness is not mastery. We wouldn't be here if we already knew how to have total peace all the time. And one of the main things that the ego part of the mind does to feed us is to make us beat ourselves up for our anger, for our upset, for our attack. What we got to do is you know that you don't want to attack, but something happened and it triggered you. So you go, that's my call for love. And I'm going to try to do the best I can to remember my innocence and not attack the next time. But it happened. I felt it. That's what it is. It's my call for love. And I'm going to try to do better next time. It really is just being gentle with yourself and not beating yourself up for those times that you do lapse. Because we're going to all do it. You know, we're going to all do it. We're going to all sometimes feel less than love. But we wouldn't be here. So if I set it up where I've got to never get mad, or else it means I'm a failure, the ego is going to have a field day with that. It's when you don't beat yourself up about getting angry and upset that you're going to the next level of consciousness. You know, okay, I lost at that time. Hey, but you know what? I don't lose it as much as I used to.
But then you say, I want to feel peace.
Yeah, you ask for peace. Yeah, whatever your personal process is will be like an individual thing. Mm-hmm. But what you want to keep in mind is your purpose. You know, that's the most important thing, is your purpose. Not your behavior, but what is this for? What are you doing it for? What is your purpose? You know, like I said, I really want peace. Okay.
Exactly.
Yeah. I really want to choose for peace. I lost my peace this time. That was my call for love. And the next time this situation comes up, I'm going to try to choose for peace again. And I'm going to see if I can choose. But forgiveness is the key to happiness. That's why the Course talks about forgiveness so much. Because unless you can forgive yourself for the errors that you make while you're learning to wake up, it's a long, hard journey.
I was thinking, yeah, you fall off the truck, but
get back on.
It's the getting back on that eventually gets you there.
It's not the falling off the truck, standing on the side of the road, beating yourself up because you fell off the truck. You know, it's like, okay, I fell off the truck. Oh, boy, that hurt. You know, wow. So what I need to do is get back on the truck and then try not to fall off the truck again.
Exactly.
You see what I'm saying? So, because I'm going to fall off. Because the pain is the you know, you paid your debt when you felt the pain. You fell off the truck and hit the ground. You know, okay, no karma there. The karma happened at the same time as the error happened. So, you know, now I go, oh, I dust myself all so much faster than I used to and go, oh, okay, I'm learning. I'm a child of God. I'm
in process.
Yeah.
Too, you know,
yeah. Let me do the love offering while we finishing up. Now you're going to get on this really tough path. The course is just the opposite. It says the hardest part is the beginning. And if you're doing it correctly, the longer you do it, the easier it gets. Not the longer you do it, the more complicated it gets. You know. And that's what I loved about it. The hardest part is the beginning, because it's at the beginning that you defend against it the most because of the old beliefs and ideas that we have. Then after a while, the result, he's like he said, the result will start to convince you that you need to keep moving in that direction, because things really do begin to get easier. I mean, it really does. I mean, so much so that it almost seems spooky sometimes how you start to see everything in your life begin to harmonize. You know, so you're on the right, you're heading the right direction if you're headed toward love, if you're really headed toward peace. So we're getting ready to go back out in the lab. We had our little break from the lab, and there are people out there waiting to give you an opportunity to see. They're just waiting for you to see if you're ready to try some of that. Well, you know, it's like, well, see, he said it wasn't no death, so I'm going to take you out. Try not to use it that way. That's why everybody don't know this stuff, because some people are that crazy. They go, oh, there's no death. Well, I'm taking you out then. You know. So we really don't know stuff until we're at a level that we're ready to handle it right, too. It doesn't even mean, people don't even hear it until they're ready for it. It's like when I'm talking to people who are not ready for the course, it sounds like I'm going, blah, 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 blah. And they say that. They say, I know you're speaking English, but I don't know what the hell you're talking about. And I said, that's for your own protection. And mine, too. Books, that's why, you know, I haven't really read a lot of books in the last 25 years. Because I'm satisfied with my path. But the thing that's amazing to me is just that, you know, it's like I had read all these books, you know, all these metaphysical books and manifestation books, and you just name it. And this book, I started to read this book, and I would read it, and I would go, what the hell did I just get through reading? Or I would be totally awake and go to sleep. Just go totally unconscious. Like, before I could get through two pages, I'd be like... And I always tell people they have problems sleeping. All you need is the Course in Miracles. If you got problems sleeping, you will go to sleep. I've never seen anybody not go to sleep who were in the beginning, especially. You know, you got a problem sleeping, just tell them to sit up in the bed when you can't sleep and read the Course.
So if we wake up in the middle of the night,
mm-hmm. and you want to go to sleep.
No, mm-hmm. and we read it and it's making sense to us.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Really good.
Oh yeah. At the point that you can read it, like I remember, I couldn't read hardly two pages. You know, now I can read a chapter or two in one sitting and get it. You know, and that's how I know my mind is changing, because you can tell your mind is changing because it gets easier and easier for you to understand what it's saying. Where at the beginning you would go, I don't really understand. And maybe you read two pages in one sentence make the slightest bit of sense to you. And that's how you can tell your consciousness is shifting. And 26 years later, I can still read this book and it'll reveal itself at another level. It never gets... I love when people come, oh, the Course in Miracles, I did that in 1996. I said, yeah, right. Yeah, it's just like a novel you read now, huh? Okay, cool. What did you read? Tell me about what you think of chapter 16? Huh? What do you think about chapter 3? He's like, you can always tell, because if you try to get into any details about what it says, they can't answer you.